Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dave on Dave, an ongoing podcast at patreon.com/DaveChen, where I, David Chen, receive advice, feedback, criticism, encouragement, deep thoughts from media mogul and creative strategist to the stars, David Cho. David, thanks for chatting today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave. It's always exciting to be on the show. you know, I appreciate it.
You know what's on my mind at the moment is
what?
How much like food delivery do you get?
Medium. I'd say like once. I don't know what the gauge is, but I'd say like once or twice a week.
Seattle recently changed its food delivery laws, and essentially what it does is it gives food delivery workers more rights, right? And I support that.
But how?
Well, there's actually no but. I actually think it's fine the way it is. I mean, the consequence is that all like Uber Eats and DoorDash orders are now probably $10 more approximately than they were before. So like if a food order used to cost $30, it now costs like $39. It's interesting how they've done it. Basically, they're like, okay, now you don't usually like when you order food delivery, you you tip before, like when you order it, you're like, and I want to tip 20%. Like that's what you put in, right? Under the new system, Uber and DoorDash understand that the prices are so high because there's now like a minimum wage guaranteed for workers that they don't ask you to tip until afterwards.
I wonder if that's nationwide, because the New York DoorDash and Uber Eats have recently done that as well in the last like few weeks.
Well, I know New York has also passed laws recently that might be similar. Yeah. So maybe that's it. But the problem is that now there are much fewer orders, right? Because of the laws of macroeconomics, when you raise the prices, there is less demand. And so we'll see who ends up like on top, or whether, you know, whether like if there's much fewer orders, then there's not going to be enough work to go around, and maybe it's going to end up hurting things. I honestly don't know, but I actually salute them for trying to do something good for the delivery workers. So anyway,
I think it's one of those things where it's like similar to many other things where people want to just like have there be a simple answer, like just increase the wage of whatever. You know, I think when the strike was going on, everyone seems to get paid more, like whatever. And it's like, which is good and right and fair. Yes.
On its face, but, it's good.
But it's super complicated because now the shows are more expensive. They're going to make significantly less shows. So there's probably going to be 30% less writers, if not more, if not less than before. And so, it's all these problems. It's like we as a modern society, I don't think have really, especially with the, I don't know, with the way our brains work now, haven't really internalized the fact that like these things are, everything's complicated. Nothing's easy, nothing's simple. And we weirdly treat the simple things as complicated, like just like Substack, instead of being like, no Nazis.
That's
indeed our policy. They want to make that complicated. But when it comes to like, how do we solve, you know, the decreasing middle class? It's like everyone's like, oh, no. It's easy. Just do this. It's extreme one way or another, and it's fine. I don't know.
Yeah, the new law requires companies pay drivers more than $26 per order. I'm sorry, per hour.
Which is great.
Yeah, I love it. I love that. Like, especially given how difficult it is to do that
job.
Should
we tip less then?
I think the idea is that like you can feel less guilty if you don't tip, because they're already being paid $26 per hour, you know?
Interesting. So,
but it's a anyway. I usually when I spend 3 hours podcasting, I like to have food available right afterwards. And
what'd you order?
Well, I order a bunch of different. But anyway, it's on my mind because I generally use the service like during days where I do a lot of podcasting, and so like because I want to have food like right when I'm done. You know what I mean?
But you didn't just order something.
I did not just order something, because I look at the prices and I'm like, oh, like, I don't know if I, you know, is this really not worth me getting my ass into the car and driving to the place? You know, because you save
$15. Where you guys live is, it's so different too. Because it's like, honestly, if I had a car, it's so much easier. And honestly, I like driving. You know what I mean? It's like, I like that feeling where it's like, here, it's like, I got to schlep like 20 minutes, 10 minutes to go get the thing. And it's then 10 minutes back, it's cold outside. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Wait, what were you going to order?
I
love finding out what people are eating.
There is this place that I like called Boiling Point, and they serve this, it's hard to explain, but it's basically like hot pot to go. So like,
oh, interesting.
You know, in hot pot, like one of the pleasures of hot pot is...
What are some of the pleasures of hot pot? Tell me.
Well, you have this big boiling thing of liquid in the middle, and then you throw in food, and then you cook this meat for like 30 seconds. And
those
then
are
it's
the
like,
pleasures
oh,
of hot pot.
Oh, the food is, the meat is barely cooked, which is how you want it because it's so tender. And you put it, you know, mix that up with some rice and it tastes really good.
Listen, you shave meat thin enough. It doesn't matter how tender, how well you cook it. It'll still be tender.
So with Boiling Point, basically they serve you a bowl of boiling hot liquid with all the toppings already inside. So you don't need to cook anything.
Interesting.
It's just all already in there, and it's this whole, it's basically like a stew they serve you.
Asian group restaurant is it? What Asian denomination?
I think it's Chinese. Yeah, Chinese.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I like Boiling Point a lot, you know. I get that a lot. So
cute.
Anyway.
Love it. Well, yeah. Speaking of food. So do you remember why we started Dave on Dave?
No.
Well, so for me, it was really because I just had a lot of thoughts on the content you're putting out.
Right,
into
that's
the
what
world.
I thought. Yeah, what I assumed. I assumed that's what. But I was like, the way you asked it made it seem like it was a different answer.
Well, so you know, you and I haven't talked on mic in a few weeks or something.
Yeah.
And in that time, you've made some content that I have some thoughts on. Not all necessarily for you. Some for just like, I think it's like it's important to clarify for you to then convey to Jeff or whoever about what's going on here. But I just like, there's some things that I was just like screaming at my phone or laptop or whatever while you guys were saying them. And I was just like, I just need to get them off my chest to you now. Because even when we're not together or we're not on mic, sometimes I'm still on you. You know what I mean? Sometimes Dave is still on Dave, even without, you know, the mic's present.
That's
as
right.
As it were.
That's right. That's right.
I sent you, I was like, oh, Dave, I wrote notes for this. And I was like looking for them before we were recording. And then it turns out I just texted you three random thoughts I had, of which I only remember what one of the things I wanted to say, which is about, so Jeff went on this whole thing about Taco Bell in the After Dark last week.
In the film,
do you
want
to do the recap of it?
Well, he essentially talked about the Taco Bell Live Mas live event that they held during the week of the Super Bowl, where they Taco Bell did a Steve Jobs Apple-esque talk about its new products that are coming out this year, which are, in the case of Apple, like the newest iPod or world-changing technology, and in the case of Taco Bell, it's like a taco that has a gigantic Cheez-It built into it or whatever, you know. So
yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's probably better than the Apple Watch. Anyway, so. So Jeff's whole thesis for the entire thing is like, I can't believe, and listen, I like Jeff, and
a Crunchwrap with a gigantic Cheez-It that's 16 times the size of a normal one.
Yeah, Baja flavor cinnamon twist.
Crunchwrap, that's what it was. Yeah,
bunch of stuff. And so Jeff has this whole thesis throughout the entire thing, and I'll preface this by saying, like, listen, I think Jeff, I told Dave that I thought the film cast and the After Dark lately have been really good, and so I'm a fan of the work that Jeff and Devendra and Dave all do. But I was like just screaming because he, like, the whole thesis of what he was saying, or the premise of what he was saying, was like underscored by the thing, like, why would anyone do this? It's so fucking stupid. It's like, who the fuck cares? And it's like, motherfucker, you're talking about it for 20 minutes right now on this podcast. And that's why they did it, dumbass. It's because if they do this,
I don't support the language of calling.
Yeah,
dumbass,
of course.
By the way. I don't.
Yeah,
support
of course.
That.
Of course. Okay, it's for comedic effect, obviously.
Okay.
It's you all know, right. Whatever. It's just, you know.
Yes.
You know, it's just, I'm just making jokes here.
Yes.
But it did drive me crazy because I was like, how could you not see that? Because he also has like a relatively high like media literacy. It's like how could you not see that this is exactly why they did it? It's like, you've never talked, or I my guess is the amount of Taco Bell he's talked about in the 10 years he's done the film cast is probably maybe a total of 4 minutes, 3 minutes at most, like cumulative in that time.
I think Jeff understands that that is part of it. I think,
really?
But
he
think,
seemed really incredulous as to why they were doing it. I was like, it seems pretty obvious.
I think it's more like the Taco Bell Live Mas Live event felt to him and to many people like some kind of crime against humanity, which is a opinion that I am sympathetic to, you know?
Like, I don't know. It's like in a world of like, what's that? Like Naked and Afraid, and like, is MILF Island a real show or a fake show? Isn't there a MILF one?
MILF Manor.
Oh, MILF Manor. Sorry, yeah. Like, those things, I think, are, like, you know, signs of, like, whatever. It's, like, Taco Bell doing, like, an announcement a la Apple to announce new menu items. It's, like, I don't know. Who cares? But, like, also a lot of people care. And also people like it. I don't know. It's just, it was just a very weird. It made me just, like, be, like, if he hadn't said the thing about, like, why would they ever do this? This is so stupid. I'd be, like, I don't know. You're kind of making it extremely clear why they're doing it. But I guess you're on the side of Jeff here, which I get.
I'm not on the side of Jeff, but I think that it is this kind of catch 22 that you're put in modern media environment, in the modern media environment, where first of all, there is a whole subgenre of TikTok videos that exist solely to get people angry, right? Like, are you familiar with this?
No.
Like, people who cook food in extremely outrageous ways. You haven't seen these videos?
Oh yeah, I've seen some. I've seen the cooking
ones. So the way it works is it's almost always
the point of them, but yeah.
Yeah, it's almost always, and Ryan Broderick has written about this at Garbage Day, but basically the setup is it's this fairly attractive woman on screen cooking something in the, she's like, oh, this is amazing. And then it's like a dude filming it, and he's always like, wow, oh, cool, you know? And she's making like lasagna, but she's doing something extremely upsetting during the lasagna. Like, she's putting in dice into the lasagna or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's putting in dice, and she's
Got back from Vegas.
She's putting in frosting, you know, into the lasagna, like icing into the lasagna. And she's like, yeah, and this is my secret weapon. I put in this icing. And then people watch the video and they comment and they're like, this is outrageous. This is terrible. This is outrageous. I hate this. Actually, you know, there's a true story. This happened recently where somebody made a video of how they cut off the bottoms of all their sneakers.
Yeah, I saw that one.
And that video exists just to get people angry. They're not really doing that. They're doing it just to piss people off. And people are playing right into their hands. Like, the media literacy, you and I, and I would also include Jeff, by the way, may be smart enough to understand what's going on, but there's millions of people out there that don't, that they will all chime in, they will drive the engagement of the video, and then the people who make the video make lots of money.
How do they make money?
From ads on TikTok and on Facebook.
Oh, because they're TikTok creators and they're getting CPM.
Creator fund, yeah. YouTube as well. Yeah, so... And this is the thing, is like the catch 22 of the modern media environment is, if you see something stupid, every fiber of your being wants to say it is dumb. But by doing so, you play right into their hands. You fulfill the horrible objective.
I actually don't agree with that.
Yeah.
No fiber of my being wants to comment on most of those things. I think that's the one place where
You're a very zen dude, David Chobe. You know, you're among the most zen people I know.
Is that true?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. You're very zen. You're very kind of live and let live. Like, oh yeah.
Well, I think
all those people want to, you know, do the terrible thing. Like, that's fine. I'm fine.
Wait,
with that.
What's the,
you know,
terrible, like, thing? Like the shoes thing?
I'm just saying generically, like, that's kind of how you think about this.
I'm pretty pro justice, I guess. But it's like, mm-hmm. to me, the things that you should get upset about are like real world things, right? Like wackos putting, I guess, per your example, dice in lasagna. I'm kind of like, oh, that's weird. But like, there are actual bad things that happen like every day that are like, we find out via the internet. Those are the things I get more upset about. Mm-hmm. I don't like, it's like, that's what bothered me about Jeff's thing, was like, it felt like he was trying to dunk on this thing, and like dunking on them, it's like, you don't need to dunk on them. B, it's like, by dunking on them, you're doing exactly what they want you to do. And so that, I guess that it's your, the catch 22 that you claim exists for online commentators like yourself.
I would argue that Jeff probably is highly aware of all that stuff, and he, you know, he knows that him getting mad at this Liv Moss event is going to make for good tape. And I have a lot of trust in Jeff's instincts about what makes good tape. I think he makes a lot of good tape, you know. So
I mean, him and I both love the Mexican pizza, which I was surprised by. I once wrote a very long, or not very long, I wrote a thing in the Atlantic about the Mexican pizza.
Nice.
Years ago, yeah.
But yeah, it's hard because for me, not you, David Joe, but for me, there's so much stupid stuff you want to call out on a given basis.
But don't you ever feel like it's a really slippery slope where it's like you calling out something stupid only sort of like it's like, I don't know. I feel like I'm so dumb and I do so many dumb things all the time. Like calling out dumb things just feels very like dangerous to me. You know, not like I'm going to get like actually milkshake ducked or something, but more like it's like, well, we're all kind of dumb, you know, like do you not get that feeling?
Yeah. Like if I call something out for being dumb, someone's going to go through like my TikTok history.
No,
and
no, not like
dumb.
Even attack you, but more on just like a
philosophical,
yeah, on a philosophical,
like,
yeah.
Who am I to have a moral superior point?
It's like there are things that I do that if someone videotaped them, they'd be like, oh, this is the, you know, cutting off the bottom of your shoes of human behavior. But it's just like really normal to me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially because I'm older. It's like I'm so set in my ways. And like a lot of my ways are fucking weird, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just like, I don't know. It's one of those things that like does it not scare you, but doesn't that like linger in your mind of like, damn, I'm weird.
I don't know. I think,
guess not.
I guess like there is an inherent arrogance that comes with being a person who puts their opinions on the internet, you know, like that I need to have, right? Like,
yeah,
that I need to be like, to some degree, I think my opinions are worth knowing about.
Yeah, I guess, and it's like that. That's my problem with the internet at large, not you. You know what I mean? It's like, or writ large. It's like, I think I appreciate your opinions. I seek your opinions out often, sometimes via the podcast, other times in private, to mixed results. And like, So it's like, I guess it's like, it's just one of those things. I guess people really do think everyone needs to know all of their thoughts. It's like, it's one of those things. Like, I've heard people complain a lot that like, it's like, God, we can't say anything anymore or whatever. It's like, bro, you can say whatever. You just can't say it publicly. It's like, also not all of your fucking thoughts need to be public. You know what I mean? And it's like, you can have like thoughts that like are maybe ill-informed even and stupid and controversial and whatever. And like, you can share those with your friends. You don't have to put everything in a fucking tweet or Instagram.
Yeah, and to be clear, that's not how I feel. To be clear, that's not how I feel. You know, like, I don't think you need to put all your stuff into tweets. Like, in fact, I've argued strenuously for the ability to shut the fuck up on this Patreon. So like, I'm very much for that. But I think like what I'm saying is,
wait, what have you argued for on this Patreon?
The ability to shut the fuck up. Like, if you don't think you have a lot to say, or if you don't think you have a lot of expertise or whatever, I think shutting the fuck up is in general, not always, in general, a decent option. So that's not me. That's not me, David. I'm just saying, like, simply by dint of what I do for a living, some part of me needs to feel like, oh, my opinion is worth knowing, and therefore,
no, you need to have some version of like self, not delusion isn't the right word, but the word I'll use. It's like, you need some sort of delusional mindset that the thoughts I'm saying need to be heard, or, you know, whatever, by some other people. And that makes sense.
Totally. But you know what I do find interesting is, like, I'm observing this very interesting pattern on Threads. So Threads is Meta's Twitter.
So you're
clone.
Still opening Threads.
I'm still opening Threads. Now, I think Threads is in general like a very terrible experience.
Wait, the app or the content?
The whole situation is bad. It's still a decent way for me to reach a good audience, but the way it's working right now is, if you thread something, like, let's just say you're like, I love oranges, you know, Threads knows how to serve that thread up to everyone who fucking hates oranges, or sorry, who like disagrees with that or has a strong opinion on oranges. And so you'll be like, you'll be like, I love oranges. And then you get people like, well, I think apples are actually pretty good. Or it's like, why aren't you mentioning
like the Facebook algorithm and not the Instagram one. it's like,
why aren't you mentioning pears? And it's like, you get, when you post on Threads, you get so many. Now, here's the advantage is you're getting a ton of people looking at your stuff that would never otherwise see your stuff. Like complete fucking random strangers from Poughkeepsie and, you know, Salt Lake City.
You have fans from Poughkeepsie?
I'm saying like people who have who have never encountered my shit before.
Yeah.
Will see the post. The disadvantage is that you spend the next like 2 days dealing with these fucking know nothing morons just commenting on your stuff.
Sorry to the people of Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, and it's just like
you know nothing morons.
I wasn't necessarily referring to them specifically, but I'm just saying like you just spend all this time receiving all these like negative messages, and honestly, I'm doing this thing where I'll you can restrict a post so like only people you follow can reply to it. That is something you could do on Twitter as well, and I think probably Instagram. And that severely limits the reach of the post because it doesn't get as much engagement. But I prefer it as an experience because then I'm not dealing with like 1,000 replies to every post being like, you're dumb, David Chen, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've seen, I saw this post the other day, David Chow. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was some person expressing some innocuous comment. I remember what it was. It was this random woman posting a thread about Andrea Mitchell, right?
Who is that? The
MSNBC like anchor personality, right?
I don't even know. Okay.
And she said, boy, like Andrea, MSNBC needs to get rid of Andrea Mitchell. She's too old to be on the air.
Tight.
Like she's making and so this person who has like 200 followers had this thread that had 1,200 replies under it. And it was just her saying, I don't like Andrea Mitchell that much. I think they should get her off the air. And so I clicked into the thread and under it, she said, hey, sorry, like this thread has clearly sparked an entire, has clearly touched a nerve. I'm really sorry. I never wanted to insult the honor of Andrea Mitchell. I deeply apologize for my original thread. And my response was, why not just delete the thread, But I think most people don't feel that. Like for me, I would just fucking delete the thread. That's what I've done that many times where I'm getting a bunch of heat and I'm just like, I
did notice the other day you were complaining about going viral. I was like, isn't that the whole point of everything you're doing? Like, isn't that why you've been doing all of this work?
When did I complain about going viral? When did I say that?
I think you were, it wasn't to me. It was online. And maybe I misunderstood what you were saying. I guess this is me asking about it. But like, you were like, if this gets too big, I'm just going to delete it. It was about something. I don't know what it was about.
I'm not the only person that expresses that sentiment.
I get that. But you're the only person I know that has constantly sought out virality. That's not a judgment. That's just like a fact. And for you to be like, oh, if this one gets too big, I'm just going to have to delete. It's like, that's the whole point of everything you've tried to do since we started this content series day on day for the last, I guess, 3 years or whatever the fuck it is.
I guess I have developed strong opinions on when I should go viral,
Now beggars are being choosers.
Yes,
to be clear.
That's right. It's like, if a thing I post goes viral and I'm like, I don't want this to represent me, or this doesn't show me at my best, it's
then
think
why
of it
put
like
it out there?
Think of it like
why
think
is it,
of it,
why is
think,
it there?
Think of it like first of all, why put it out there? Because like maybe I only want the people who I follow follow me to see it, Dave Cho. And there's no real easy way
close
to do that.
Friends that on Instagram.
I know, but like sometimes you if on Threads it's not easy to do that. On Blue Sky it's not easy.
Why
to do
does
that.
It need to be on Threads and
on
Blue Sky?
On Instagram it's not easy. Anyway,
on Instagram
I should say.
It is.
I should say on TikTok or YouTube, it's not easy to do that. So anyway.
So you want to maximize minimal reach. Just start a Finsta, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's a thing that happens where like, sometimes I make a thing and I'm like, oh, I would be happy if everyone I knew saw this and then no one else.
Really?
Yeah, that happens.
And then so you're running the risk of that by putting it out into the algorithm?
This is how I live my life on the edge, David Cho. You know, like,
I don't think that's living your life on the edge as much as it is.
Some people skydive. Some people skydive. Some people bungee jump. I post content that's not ready to be seen by 5 million people on, you know, public.
Wait, so you're doing it for the thrill? I just need to understand what the fuck is going on. Because I'm having trouble. Because I consider you to be a pretty smart fella, you know? And this thing just seems illogical to me. And you famously believe in ethos as well.
I guess the way to think about it is more like I post like how a normal person would post, but just I have a course of action in mind if this thing starts to spiral out of control, whereas most people do not.
Again, I just don't get it. I just don't
but
get
like
it.
Most history is littered with the corpses of people who have gone viral when they didn't want to. Like, and they never thought, oh, if I go viral, what am I going to do in that situation? Like, they never thought that.
Yeah, but
they never had that thought. I have the thought. I know, like, in this case, like, okay, in this case, I'm just going to delete the post. In this case, I'm fine with this going viral. You know, like, I'm okay with that one.
But if you're not fine with going viral, why not just not post it?
But, like, most people are not actually fine with their stuff going viral, is my point. Like,
I'm not talking, I don't need this whataboutism. I'm just trying to find out why you're doing it.
I'm saying I have the same motivation as 99% of people out there why they post, right? Like, why
to
do you
go
post
viral?
Stuff?
I don't. I mean, I kind of.
That's what
like...
I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Most people are not posting to go viral. That's my point. Like, most people are just posting. They're like, hey, I just want to share this with my friends. And then, in the case of me, that's also the case. But sometimes my shit goes viral.
But
that's
what
I'm saying.
But we used to the whole premise of we created a sort of in joke on the podcast about called Chobucks. Which
yes.
is, I think it's from the first or second Dave on Dave.
I don't know, but it's an amazing concept that we have used that we use in the Chen household many a time. So,
and it's about the idea of like, and this is gonna sound more pejorative than I mean for it to, but it's talking about like online validation or online views as some sort of like emotional currency, right? So it's like you almost want just that quick hit of like online. Likes or attention or something, but at a measured amount. So you're like calibrating sort of like your dosage of trope. I guess it's like,
yes.
Interesting. You're an interesting character, Dave.
Again, that's not exactly how I describe it. Like I understand why you're describing it that way, but that's not how I describe it. I think most people are just not prepared for what happens when their stuff blows up, like when a random post they make goes viral, and like you have, you know, the Daily Mail writing a story about it and like 50,000 people commenting on it, and it's like it's very overwhelming, and most people just literally don't know how to handle it, and they're just like, okay, I guess I have to let this happen. And I'm saying is, if that happens in some of my posts, I'm not gonna let it happen. That's all I'm saying. Right, like I just have a plan for some of my posts to not let it happen.
Interesting. You have an online escape room of sorts.
That's right. Yes, which is like delete the post and never talk about it again. Like this actually happened to me. I don't know if we talked about this. Like when Piers Morgan called me out. Do you remember that?
Was it about vacuum?
No. This happened like when I was still working at Amazon.
Wait, Piers Morgan called you, Dave Chen, out?
Yes.
About what?
So Piers Morgan did some dumb shit. I think it was during his,
as
like,
he's wont to do.
He said something dumb about Meghan Markle or something.
Okay.
And I was working at Amazon at the time, and I made a tweet about like how, you know, I can't believe Piers Morgan said this dumb thing. And I did not tag Piers Morgan, but I used his name. And
no stars, no asterisks.
No star. Well, yeah, that was a big mistake. And then, he quote tweeted me and he's like, wow, this is really funny coming from someone at Amazon, you know, one of the worst companies imaginable because of blah, blah, blah. And then I instantly started getting like inundated with all this hatred, right? Like people just
bombing. Did anyone
like,
at work say anything to you about it?
No, no one gives a shit.
I don't know. I could see. Yeah. I mean, Piers Morgan is a pretty
big. Well, I deleted the tweet immediately.
Yeah, and but then, like the clip didn't, like a PR person didn't get pinged or something like that.
I deleted the tweet immediately, and like literally how the algorithm used to work is if somebody's quote tweeting something and the tweet is deleted, that tweet all is basically quotes. Dead.
Right? Yeah,
like,
yeah.
All the quote tweets are basically dead because there's no content there anymore. And so I deleted the tweet like 5 minutes after he quote tweeted me, and then like all the tweets replies stopped, and that was it. I didn't need to think about it for the rest of my life. And I blocked Piers Morgan, and I've never talked about him again until now. But my point is, like, most people would just let that ride. Like, most people, if that happened to them, they would just let that ride.
Can you walk me through what you're feeling as it was happening? Do you remember it all? Like, so you're like having dinner or something, or eating breakfast, I guess. Maybe,
I'm pretty sure
UK
I was
time.
At work when it happened.
Oh, you're at the office.
I made
in
a tweet
Seattle.
At the office. Yeah. And then
how quickly then, did he quote tweet it?
I think it was within an hour, within one okay. to 2 hours. And I think the first part of me was just like, how did he find this? He must have some intern like searching his name.
Might
at
not
all
even
times.
Been him too.
Absolutely, 100%. I think it's highly likely it wasn't him, right? The second thing was, is there any way I can turn this to my advantage? Because I fucking hate that guy. And nice. I think he's like a terrible human and like a net negative for society.
Sure.
And is there some way like me feuding with him could be satisfying and good and positive and beneficial? And the answer is kind of for my online profile, but like there's no real like benefit to
seems like it would be potentially very bad for your job too.
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, okay, having a spat with some online person, like it just doesn't, it's not, it's generally pretty undignified, you know, like it's not.
I don't think it's even undignified, but it's just like usually when people
are
fighting.
It's not like we're having a principled argument, you know, like I was being kind of a jerk to him and he was being an asshole to me and that was it. So it's like, okay, I have no real like moral ground to stand on here. And so I'm just like, okay, well, I'm just going to delete the tweet then. You know, like, I guess there's no advantage to leaving the tweet up. I'm just going to delete the tweet. And that's what happened.
I thought he mentioned it on the show, but he was a quote tweet is what happened.
It was a quote tweet, yeah. I mean, maybe he would have mentioned it on the show if I'd left it up. You know, who knows?
You probably wouldn't even be doing this right now because he'd be so famous. you'd be a fucking star if he'd done that. Yeah,
that's right.
You know?
I could have divided my life into before the Piers Morgan tweet and after the Piers Morgan
tweet.
You'd
have your own crooked media show and, you'd have a podcast on Higher Ground. It's like you'd be a real hero to the left. And
yeah,
instead,
yeah.
You're here talking to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Complaining about DoorDash.
Wow, when you say it like that, it sounds incredibly sad, David.
What could have been, Dave?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, what could have been?
How
the things we could have done together.
Things we wouldn't have done. How was Vegas?
No, me and Piers Morgan.
Oh, you and Piers Morgan? Yeah, I mean, well, you know, it's like Tucker started as a CNN correspondent, so who knows what you could have become.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You could be any number of things right now. Did you have fun in Vegas? How was it?
Yeah, it was good. It was great. Had a great time. I played in 3 poker tournaments, and in one of them, I got to... It was 57 entries. The top 6 places paid out, and I was eliminated at 9th place.
How much does sixth place win?
Actually, I think it was the top 5 places paid out, and every single play. And it was a weird tournament. That one, everyone got $1,600.
Oh,
the
weird.
entry fee was $200.
Got it. $1,600.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, you know. I'm the World Series of Poker is happening at the end of May, and that's probably the next big attempt at doing anything big, you know, significantly poker related is what I'm going to do. It's tough, you know, it's tough to know whether I can be any good at this. I have to say, David Cho, it's a weird thing where I struck up some fun conversations with people, and I think I've made clear on this podcast that poker is one of those things that combines both luck and skill. There are other games in Vegas that are just luck. There is no professional roulette players, right? There are no professional craps players. It's because it is pure luck, right? But poker is a game that combines luck and skill, and poker is a game where you can do every single thing correct every single thing correctly and still lose. And what's challenging about being early stage like me, I'm just starting my poker journey, is sometimes I don't know if I did well, if I was lucky, or if I did badly, if it was bad luck or if it was bad playing, you know, like separating those things out is quite a challenge for me at this stage. But
I think your wife accurately, and as she often does, accurately assess the situation by saying you probably, for better and for worse, like were maybe a little too good at the beginning. You know what I mean? It's just like things really kind of went your way in a way that probably created this, like, although I don't know, maybe with you it would have happened anyways, where you just would have like felt so like strongly about it.
I'll just say whatever feelings I felt about my confidence are completely gone at this point. Like I am honestly shocked that I had that much confidence back then, you know? And by that back then, I mean like in December to go play in World Poker Tour.
Yeah.
I now have been very humbled, you know, by a series of losses, and I now have a fairly clear understanding of how much I don't know. But it's right. She's right in the sense that in general, that's a danger for people who like do well early on, right? Like, and it's kind of a microcosm of like why rich people or successful people can be so stupid. Some, like Elon Musk, I would argue, you know, it's like he is so successful that he might misattribute it to his own intelligence, when in fact there might be other factors at play. Anyway, I know you and I disagree on Elon Musk, but
in what way?
Well, I think you have a slightly higher estimation of him than I do. But my point is like...
Wait. Listeners of the show, just to be clear, I don't like Elon Musk.
Okay, all right.
I think that's important to clarify, because you're making it sound like I'm some sort of like Elon guy, when it's just like, I think, I don't know, it's like, more complicated than just like, I think he sucks. I think he's a horrible person. I think he's done horrible things. I think he continuously does awful, awful, dumb things and does not know how to run Twitter, but might get us to space. I don't know. Fucking might be the person that helps us like survive Earth. I don't know.
Right. But my point is like, you like poker, playing poker has given me this microcosm insight into like how people make attribution errors, you know?
Well, can I posit a theory?
Yes, but let me just finish what I was saying, is like just how like people who like experience success early on can be misled as to the true nature of that success. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, no, I think it's also like, to me, there's a little bit of like, you're a person, at least this is again a theory, I could be wrong here, but my experience of you can get really excited about things, you know, and you can like kind of like really like start to extrapolate very quickly what something could be, which I think is a really good skill, and is, it speaks to your general joie de vivre that I think is great. But like in this case, it's just like, yeah, it's like, you know, it's there's just a lot more steps to it, but
it's a long slog for sure.
Yeah. Also, it's like, I think what she said is also right, where it's just like, it's also okay for your hobby to be something where you're not one of the best people in the world at, but just something that brings you joy, and that when you're there and doing it and having fun, as long as it's not, you know, sending your family into financial ruin, that it's like, you know, it's also good just to do that. It's like playing like pickup basketball. You know what I mean? Not everyone needs to go to the NBA. It's just weird that poker has a chance where anyone can go play in the NBA.
I don't know if I feel, I don't, I honestly, you know, me, honestly, David Cho, I think you're referring to the Les Diary episode I did with Joy, right? That's what you're talking about.
Joy O'Napping.
There was actually a significant portion of that conversation that was deleted.
Oh, really?
Because we had a little bit of a disagreement about this very point that you're making.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
It's okay. There's no need to apologize. But I guess the short version is, I don't know if I agree with you. You know, or I don't know if that's like my life philosophy, right? Like, I think that
don't do anything you can't be the best at.
Not even the best at, but like at least remarkable or distinctive at. You know, like I don't. For most of my life, I have not seen a point in that, and that's just me. And I know a lot of people feel differently, and maybe the way I'm doing it is not the healthiest or best one, but it is my approach. You know, so that's kind of where I'm at with it. Yeah.
Okay. Like, I don't know. It's like, yeah, it's not, it couldn't be me. I think it's like, like, I think it's like, there are things that I don't like doing in public if I'm not good at them. You know what I mean? But there's tons of things I do in private that I'm horrible at, just for fun. Just like, cause some things are fun to do. It's like also like playing any sports, like doing things like that, where it's like, there is a definitive like difference in what my ceiling is now, even relative to what my ceiling was 15 years ago. You know what I mean? But some things are just fun to do. You know, it's like fun to go kick a soccer ball. It's like fun to play basketball with your friends. It's fun to do these things that are like, you know, it's like, by no means will I ever be, even within the city that I live in the top, I don't know, 10% of people that do that thing. But it's like still fun to do it. You know, it's just because it's like some things just do for, I don't know, for fun. And it's like not for anything else, at least for me.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah. That's a very reasonable, normal human reaction to have to something, you know? And it's just not how I'm wired, I don't think. You know, like,
well, now always, at least you want to, like, now everything I see you do ever will be interpreted through that prism of, you know, I go, whatever. Okay.
When I think of poker, I don't necessarily think I can be the best, but maybe, like, I do think I can bring something to, like, around storytelling around poker. You know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, that part I think you definitely should do. I'm very supportive of that.
Right.
And I don't think that requires you to be even good at, like, I think you being bad at poker is good content, is good tape, you know? But, like, genuinely, it's like, because it's like, that's also life. Like, I don't think it's like there's any, like, rarely are the best stories.
I don't want to be bad at poker and make good content about it. Like, that doesn't strike me as particularly satisfying to me, you know? Like, but that
seems
me,
like,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, to me, it's like stories about people who win are good for fiction. But story, like, it's what makes Rocky so good. Rocky 1 is so good because he doesn't win. You know what I mean? Sorry, spoilers for Rocky. But, like, you know, it's just the fact that, like, you see him do all of this stuff and it's like what makes, like, honestly, some TV shows and some sports movies kind of boring, because it's like knowing what's going to happen and knowing that they win in some ways is very, like, I think especially in today's society, or maybe not, but, like, I think it's just like, it's just very unsatisfying. You know, it's like, their actual, like, real life, like, especially nonfiction, documentaries, things like that, I think are predicated on people not being the best. You know, it's like King of Kong is, like, fun because it's, like, whatever. But I think I'm more interested in things where it's just, like, no, there's, like, other ways to symbolize victory. There's other ways to have massive, like, human gains that are much more relatable that aren't, you know, like, financial outcomes or success. It's like, you know, I think the most interesting stories often have to do with, like, these more human things where it's like, okay, I didn't necessarily have the scripted ending, but I had an ending in which, like, I really, I don't know, like, there's, like, something really profound learned or experienced or whatever from it. I don't know. I think that, like, so to me, it's like, I think for you and your, and that I told you this, like, off mic, I think, as well, where when you were doing your poker thing, I was like, I think whether you win or lose, I think it's compelling tape. And I think in some ways, like, if you won, I don't think it's that interesting. Like, I don't think, like, you making money isn't, like, you making money is the least interesting thing about what you do with anything. You know what I mean? It's like, I think it's just like, how can you, I don't know, just like, how can your experience be something that resonates with other people on a deeper, richer level? Because it's also like, most people don't make money and don't win and don't whatever. It's like, that's not the actual human experience. So, I don't know. That's just my take on it.
It is true that in a tournament, like, the overwhelmingly vast majority of people do not win anything, you know, like, in
also,
a given poker tournament.
In life. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, not even just like take the, that's what I thought was really interesting about the poker stuff was I was like, oh, there's, like, really interesting, like, things you can learn about people, you know? And, like, that's what's compelling to me. It's like, if, you know, there's, like, some documentary that, like, I'm helping out on right now. And it's like, I have to keep explaining to the people. It's like, the story isn't about, like, the details of what happens. It's about, like, how the things that are happening can resonate with the person watching this. And, like, again, it's like, there are times where people really like winners, but there are also times where people just want to see people do human things, you know, and experience kind of, like, I don't know. It's like, don't you think, like aren't your favorite movies ones where there's like the complexity of like, you know, humanity represented? It's like,
absolutely. And honestly, I think there's so much potential for poker related content out there. Like, one of the, there's only like two movies I can remember that deal with poker in any substantial way over the course of the last few decades. One of them is Rounders,
yeah,
which came out really long time ago. And then the other one is Casino Royale. And it's like
Molly's game,
right? And but that didn't even really have poker as a game featured very much. I just think
you
there's
think
so
Casino
much
Royale is poker more as a game than Molly's game.
Yes.
Interesting.
Because they actually show hands, like a poker hand, play out. I don't remember that happening in Molly's game. Maybe it does. I don't know.
I think that's because it's not the hands that are interesting. Like to care about that, it's like you might as well just watch World Series of Poker. You know, it's like
right. You know, what is the sort of content that can be made around it? It's stuff that I've been really thinking about. But I think I don't know. I think it is really dramatic. You know, it's when you're sitting there and playing against other people. Honestly, a huge part of it is storytelling. It's like, what is the story you are telling about the hand you have? What is the story they are telling? And do you believe it? And that is fundamentally what some of it boils down to, in my opinion. So anyway,
yeah,
I think we might
just agree to disagree. Because like to me, it's like it's almost like hearing about hands is like, have you ever had someone try to explain to you like a fantasy football like mm-hmm. related thing where it's like, I understand everything that's happening here, but also yeah. I don't give a shit. But if mm-hmm. like you told me like, oh my God, there's this crazy nail biter and I was like waiting all night, and then this all like all the things around the moment are interesting. Mm-hmm. Nothing mm-hmm. about the actual like, you know, like the actual interplay is like, you know, something mm-hmm. that resonates with me at all.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I shall tailor my poker conversation to you accordingly, David Cho.
okay. But that's not what this is about.
Yeah, no, sure. I'm serious. I won't bore you with the hands then.
No. I mean, listen, bro, I like hearing all of it from you because you're my friend. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I just more mean like if someone was like making, like if we were working together on something, I would be like, there's a point at which the relevance of like the actual mm-hmm. thing versus, you know, it's the reason why like people talk about like, you know, with sports and stuff, like oftentimes the things around the game are more interesting than the game itself, because people just care about characters and people care about drama and people care about, you know, like soap operas. They don't care about the like nuts and bolts of most.
I guess I would say that, you know, I've spent a significant portion of my life watching sports documentaries. Like I remember when I was a kid, I've told this story on the Filmcast before, how we would go to the library. My mom would drop us off at the library because we had no money, right, when we were yeah. growing up. And I would just watch all the videos that were at the library. And they're literally just sports documentaries. It's like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Barry Bonds. And it would be like about their careers. And it's a combination of both the beautiful things they were able to do with the game and also the backstory. And I think there is a big enough audience in the poker world, like in the millions of people, that will be interested in both things. You know, that's my hunch.
You know that a bunch of my professional career has been making sports documentaries, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the point I'm making.
It's like
I'm saying you might not be the target audience, but I think that there is something out there for some content that encompasses both components. You know, but anyway, these are just very random musings at this point. I have nothing concrete to pitch or anything like that. I'm just kind of like been thinking through it and reflecting on the experiences I've had. You know, you meet so many different people at the table, like people from all different walks of life, you know, that have really different reasons for being there. For instance, I struck up a conversation with this guy. Let's call him Ken.
Lef. Oh,
let's call him Ken. And he actually moved to Vegas, and I actually reached out because I was like, hey, I've been not seriously down the line of doing anything like that, but I've been considering what it would be like if I wanted to spend more time in Vegas. And so I asked him about like what his life was like, and we actually connected on Discord, and he said he told me about like...
Wait, you met him in person?
I met him in person at the Bellagio, and then... I was like, hey, can I, and we struck up a conversation. I said, hey, can I ask you some questions about your poker? He plays poker professionally. And he says, prior to poker, I had a corporate job in design. And I ran up my bankroll over the pandemic before making the jump and deciding to move out west. Being able to work remote, mostly remote, made it an easier transition as well. Not to mention getting a home loan as a professional gambler is nearly impossible. I enjoy doing this far more than my job. The concept of not having to answer to someone and working in fear of losing a job sucks. I can go on about this, but I digress, end quote. Anyway, there's a little interesting insight into a guy who like made a change from being a design person to moving to Vegas, and now he's trying to move up the ranks in the Vegas poker scene.
Does he have a partner, or is he just single?
Yeah, I think he has, my sense is he has a kid going into high school.
Wow. So he made his kid move to Vegas?
I want to say this guy looked like he was 28 years old. So he's like an Asian dude.
Asian. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's an Asian dude. And he looked like he's 28. And then so I'm like shocked that he's like going into high school. But yeah, apparently Vegas is some of the worst schools in the country, which is very sad.
It sounds like an interesting priority to make instead of just making that choice maybe 4 years after 4 years later after he's graduated from high school. I'm not gonna tell anyone how to live their lives, but some of the worst schools in the country, it just seems.
Well, we don't know where he came from, David Cho, so maybe he came
hopefully
he came
from a place worse. for anyway. Ken Jr.'s sake,
anyway. So I meet people and I write down their stories. I don't know where it's all going, but it's stuff that I'm doing. So.
Okay. Cool. Is there anything else you want to go through?
No, I think that'll be good for now, man. How are you doing? How's the rollout of your thing? And
what's it called, Dave?
Postcard.
Nice. Just wanted to know if you remembered it or not.
Yeah. Of course.
It goes you ebb and flow from thinking this is going to be great, everything's going to be perfect, and we're really set, to being like, oh fuck, I'm making a horrible decision, and I'm going to be embarrassed on a very large scale size. And the reality is, hopefully it'll be on the better side of that, but it'll be a mix of those two things, and there's going to be things that you'll mess up and you fail at, and you just have to be able to quickly adjust and keep a level head. It's like, we'll see. It's that the guys are about like, or the team is about, I would say, 3 weeks behind where they need to be, but that's like to be expected just because of some unforeseen mini hurdles, but nothing crazy. So I think hopefully by, I would say, mid-March, there should be product in many people's hands and a product that I'm happy with and that I'm excited to put out there. But, it's just, I think building, it's funny. It's like everything else I've ever done, I've always kind of been able to do it incrementally. And this is the first time where it feels like, okay, it has to work out the gate. So it's like, if you think of like, when we did.
This can't be the Apple Vision Pro of.
I would love to sell out, even if it implies there's lots of returns coming. Cause it's like, the Apple Vision Pro, like say what you will. It's like, I think it can't be honestly, it can't be the Blue Sky. You know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, it has heat for 3 weeks and then it goes away dramatically. And even when they like, I think they have,
right. Yeah.
They'll have a few, obviously like the story for Blue Sky is not over yet, but.
I agree they're not doing well. I will say it is the one social service that I spend the most time on right now.
It
has my favorite vibes right now, Blue Sky. Yeah.
It's just one of those things where it's like, I think they started off really, really strong and then they just weren't able to sort of meet the moment.
They did not meet the moment. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
And so, it's like, I think if I were running, like if I'm the Blue Sky team, my guess is they're probably not happy with it. And they probably feel a lot of frustration around, everything. And so I don't want to feel that way. I don't think, it's something to consider about, like, I think in 2024, success is largely determined by how you choose to tell the story of what it is you're doing. And honestly, it's a good reminder that you just like, you need to build a narrative of success around what you're doing, regardless of whether or not it's true. And that sounds like kind of like weird, like snake oily bullshit. But I think it's just like the reality of you know, so much of your value is based on how people perceive you and less about what you're doing.
Agreed.
And so it's just like, how can you create a story that is like compelling to say, no, this is actually working. And so, you know, it's just all of that shit. And it's like, it's hard to see the forest through the trees. And I'm doing my best to sort of, you know, deal with that. I think the other thing that's interesting is just like, and I feel like we've talked about it a lot, but like just being older is hard, you know, and it's, you don't have the same energy that you used to. And you just have to be a lot more cognizant of how you spend your time and energy. Like I like high key have pretty much stopped drinking just because like, I can't be slow any day. And then the day after you drink, sometimes like if you drink a lot, like, you know, whatever. And so, you know, there's things like that you just have to adjust. And yeah, I think, but I don't know. I'm bullish on myself and I feel good about things. I just have to like constantly be reframing my mind so that I'm being as productive and as positive as I can be. Mm-hmm. Because kind of like, you know, it's like they say in Dune, fear is the mind killer. Yeah. And like your own sense of self-doubt can compromise so much of what you think you can do. And a lot of times I just have to like kind of, I think one of my best professional and personal strengths, albeit as a detriment to some of my emotional intelligence for a long part of my life, was like my ability to compartmentalize anything and sort of just like stress about something, put it into a box and then like, you know, put it off to the side so I can focus on other things and then eventually reopen that box when I need to, you know? And so just kind of what I have to do.
All right, David Cho. Well, you have my support and my encouragement. And
plus I get a few, I think we negotiated 2 weekly plugs, you know, provided I can figure out a way to frame it where it makes sense that you're plugging yourself and not me.
100%, if not more. But probably spread out over some period of time.
Yeah,
probably not twice in a row. But
I'm definitely
happy to. It's not literally the least I can do, but it's close. So yeah, I'm happy to do it. So
maybe we'll see if you can use some of that viral magic for me, you know, into TikToks that you don't want to delete, you know.
All right, David Cho.
You know what I mean?
Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support at patreon.com/DaveChen. We'll see you later.